Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm back for a couple of days. How is your time away from me, Ilish Forfar? I'm J.D. Bungus, by the way, if you don't know.
We know.
I'm not Justin Cuthbert, and who usually fills in for me.
It was good.
Yeah?
Did miss you.
You did?
Yeah, always.
Thank you.
Always.
It's really nice of you.
You.
I really like the summer schedule.
I'm aware.
I'm a big fan of taking the odd day off, getting a few messages, people asking me if
I'm
fired.
Did you get fired again? Yeah, nice.
Yeah, people asking, saying I should be fired, you know?
That's a nice feeling.
People. That's always nice. It's usually nice, especially since, you know, it's like there's a billion shows. The idea that they're like, you shouldn't even have one. That's tough.
We can't, you know, demote that's... you to, like, you know, a 30-minute podcast.
No.
Just
no,
snipping
no,
you.
No. No, completely fired. God, it's so hot right now. I got to spend like the last couple of days near a pool, and I gotta say, that's if people are out there on days like this and have a pool and aren't just sending out a mass text like, hey.
So JD can go pee in your pool?
Yeah. Well, I won't. Here's the deal I'm willing to make. I won't pee in your pool if you invite me to your pool
when it's 1,000% humidity.
Yeah, it's just like I think you got to go to jail if you're not just inviting everybody. If you're just kind of like hoarding it to yourself, that's like, yeah, when you see movies where they have all the rations and or all the water and they go like, "What? You had water?" It's the equivalent of the Dumb and Dumber, "You had two pairs of gloves this entire time." You know, like you got to offer up the pool. It's just so bad. It's so unbelievably hot. I hope everybody's doing okay.
I was
like, when you wake up in the morning and walk outside like this?
No.
You went lake, yeah. You were lake.
I was laking it. Perfect timing to have planned a cottage weekend because I was in the water 89% of the trip. Almost slept out there on the floating mat.
Yeah.
Got a lot of boat time in. You have to be moving the whole time. You can't sit and park the boat anywhere because it just...
Oh.
Suffocates you.
I was going to say, though, this is the only problem with cottage time right now is lake is amazing. Day is amazing. Most cottages, no AC.
Yeah.
And you get put into like I was thinking if you had planned a weekend getaway with people, one of those where it's not just you and even the main house. Maybe you got a fan. Maybe you got even something. Maybe you do have a little bit of air conditioning in there. Who knows? But one of those places where you got to go into a bunkhouse, you know, one of those like basically sweat lodges, and you got to sleep in there with another fella or your significant other, something like that. You're toast. You're not making it out. You got to sleep outside. You just got to get ravaged by the bugs. It's like, which one are you choosing? The bugs or the heat? Like, you're getting kind of both, but boy, oh boy. That would have been a weekend ruiner. This one was too hot.
I got the basement at this cottage. It was much cooler. A little damp, but I don't care.
Who
at that
cares?
Point.
Like, oh yeah, who cares?
It was like tolerable, which was a wonderful word.
How many millipedes did you think you slept with? That was like.
You know, this is my friend that has a very fortunate.
Oh,
life.
That's that friend.
Yes.
Fortunate life friend.
Yeah,
okay. I like how you phrase it because you want to keep going back to fortunate life friend's
she's,
cottage.
You know, it's
wealthy.
This is a very nice cottage. This is no shack. So I was very fortunate as well to stay at this place. So I don't have the same experience as you're explaining, but I do know the sweaty bunkhouse.
Oh,
the bunkus bunkhouse.
Yeah, the bunkhouse. I can't imagine it. By the way, I need to ask you a question. Why? I have oat milk now. I think this is the world's greatest scam. Like, what am I?
It's a fraud that we have started to use this.
Okay, I needed to just clear this up with you because I know you're an oat milk person.
Not anymore. You're right. It's a scam. It's not even good for you, apparently, now. Like, I read something that it's, like, A, not great for the environment, even though they tried to convince you that it uses, like...
Not great for the environment?
Like, it still uses, like, a lot of water. It's, you know...
Oh, shocker.
Yeah. I'm not into it anymore. I was into it, like, about a year ago when it first came out. It was, like, kind of like a creamy option, but not, like, you know, it's not too
cream.
Bad.
It's not, you're like, if only there was a creamy option for coffee.
Well, everybody was using oat milk, and it was the new hot topic. And, yeah, I tried it for a little while. Now it's an extra 80 cents.
Yeah.
At that one location that you buy coffee.
It's more just about everywhere.
Yeah, and I also read another article about how that one location actually changed up their oat milk to be using a cheaper, less flavorful oat milk. So if you've been going and getting oat milk in your coffee and you've noticed a change, there has been a significant change in the quality of the oat milk.
I am shocked. Shocked that these venues would do whatever they can to turn a little bit of extra profit. I am completely blown away. I just think every time I take a sip of the oat milk stuff, it tastes worse than milk or cream. And I'm always thinking, how much better could this possibly be for somebody to justify trying to replace it with milk or cream or even sweetener, whatever the hell you put into your coffee. There's like a billion different coffee options. This has to be the worst one. This absolutely unequivocally has to be the worst one, and I don't get it. I think it's just because it sounds oats, and everybody's obsessed with oat everything.
You think
like
you're getting skinnier.
No, it's you think that. You think oat exfoliant. You think oatmeal. Like, oh, it's always so good for you. Oats are good for your skin. They're good for your health. They're just so good. Oat is everything. Oats are overrated, all right? Oats are for horses. We got to leave it there. I just give me just a good old-fashioned cream and a coffee, okay?
If
that's what takes me down, if that's what puts me into, you know, obesity, whatever, I don't care. Just cream. I'm going back to cream. I'm going to be a cream guy.
How about this? I went to a coffee shop about a month ago, and I was like, what dairy options do you have? This is a very bougie coffee shop. Oat milk, macadamia nut milk.
Oh, yeah.
And so I actually tried
the
macadamia nut milk. You think oat milk's bad?
Yeah.
This is
moon
jail. It should not exist. I felt a grainy layer on my teeth
for
the entire day. It was disgusting.
That's gross.
Don't order that.
Not only is that gross, you have to pretend like you're loving it. Like, oh my God. Do you know what's so delicious is macadamia milk? People are like, oh my God, I know. It's so amazing. It's just trash.
So hipster.
It's all the same trash. Just go back to cream. And if you're lactose intolerant, clearly almond milk is the better option here, okay? Mm. Like, I want to hear about rice milk.
But
I want to hear about
coconut milk's not bad.
If you like coconuts, which I do not.
Oh, wow.
I'm not a coconut flavor guy. Coconut does nothing for me. I kind of like it when you have the odd coconut thing and you get that little, the shaving kind of crunch. That's like a nice texture feel.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual flavor of coconut does zilch for me. It's gross.
I will
Our buddy Sam McKee's favorite chocolate bar is Almond Joy the one with Mounds? That's it. Every time I see him eat it, I actually think he's just pranking me. He's just doing it to prank me because I'm like, how could this be your number one bar? And he's like, no, it is. It's the number one. And I'm like, that's nuts. Yeah. Bresky just rubs me in the ear and said Mounds. I'm like, that's correct.
The friend's place I was staying at, she had yogurt in the fridge, and I went up and grabbed it for breakfast thinking it was coconut-flavored yogurt. Mm-hmm. It was coconut yogurt. The yogurt is made out of coconut. So it's not like a Greek yogurt or a dairy yogurt. It is a coconut yogurt. It's a dairy alternative. And I didn't realize that because it just said coconut. Also not good.
All right. So speaking of Mounds, you don't really want to see any of the guys that threw off them yesterday ever again for the Toronto Blue Jays. It's just I was off last couple of days for the first impressions thing, and I sort of hate when I come back and do – this is the only downside of the vacation. I come back and I go, what am I really allowed to talk about here?
Yeah, and then we have to hear all your takes from Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. Because to me, I go, this is fresh, and to the rest of the world, they go, yeah, JD, we're over it. We saw that on Friday.
We saw Mitch White, right?
Yeah, we saw Mitch White. We know what's going on here. But yesterday – I know the Jays have had a couple of injuries. I don't think that's really an excuse for how the team looks right now from a pitching standpoint, because they've suffered an injury to Ross Stripling, who entered the season as a number six starter, and Longman, and Tim Mayza, their lefty, who really, since his first injury, has not turned into be the same guy he was before it. Today's text line Tuesday, by the way. Ailish is texting me.
I said, Hey, buddy, say it's text line Tuesday via text.
Honestly, it's Tuesday. If you don't, if you listen to the show, if you listen to this right now, you don't already know.
Well, we had Weigh In Wednesday. Maybe they think we've switched it up.
Honestly, we're so always at Weigh In Wednesday now, too. It's summer. Like, you guys do the work. You got a pitcher who gets hurt in Meza, who, like I said, was not the guy he was before, and Ross Stripling. And that still equates to a night that you turn on your television and the broadcast is talking about how the Jays need six innings out of Yusei Kikuchi no matter what against a divisional opponent that isn't that far back in the rear view.
Two and a half games behind the Jays now.
Well, the Orioles are... They've got like 14 games left against Toronto. I think it's 14. So, yeah. They're right there with you. They're neck and neck with you. Sure, you got Manoah on the bump today. But again, it feels like we're back into that mode of if they don't get the Manoah win, God, it hurts so unbelievably much. I hate harping on the same thing. I really don't want to feel like I'm beating a dead horse here. But this, if you think that they did a good job at the deadline and you watched last night's game, I don't know how that wouldn't change your perspective a little bit. Again, last night, Yusei Kikuchi, you need six innings from him. That's what the broadcast keeps saying. And everybody who follows this team goes, yeah, they do. They cannot just eviscerate the bullpen today. Why? Because they don't have a particularly deep bullpen. Sure, they have a lot of decent stuff in there or okay stuff in there, but there's nothing phenomenal really in the bullpen. Then they turn to Trent Thornton, who's still back with this team, who's now, once again, the long man. That maybe that was supposed to be Mitch White. Okay. He gets bumped up a role, but that's what happens when you get one injury and you don't really address your depth. It's why people thought that they needed to add so many more arms than they did. They added two bullpen arms and a middle relief kind of guy who Mitch White, my first impression of him, we'll get into them later with Ben Ennis at 7, but my first impression of White was, all right, he's fine. Maybe, I guess, he's got that one pitch, the slider, that they view as something he can throw more and hone a little bit better, but stuff looked pretty mediocre to me. Looked like a guy who got into trouble basically every single inning, and it's one time out. Like, I'm not freaking out about it or anything like that. I'm just saying this isn't exactly someone that I'm going to ever be excited to watch pitch. It doesn't really feel that way. Feels like he's a get-through-a-start kind of guy. He looks like someone who might be your sixth starter, your seventh starter.
Still a better option than Kikuchi at this point, though.
Well, I'll be honest. Kikuchi had those other two good starts. But you put the stats together now with Yusei Kikuchi. And this is over his last 10 starts, including last night. His ERA is 6.93. Whew. His whip, which is walks and hits per innings pitch, 1.65. So he's putting on over a base runner and a half every single inning. Opponents average just under 300, 278. Opponents OPS, 1,000. Whew. He's given up 14 home runs in those 10 starts. And he's walking over 5 batters per 9 innings. It's a calamity. It's calamitous. It's just, this is not working out. And they don't have any other options, though. Mm-hmm. Again, there's no choice to say, hey, let's put Yusei Kikuchi back on the IL or whatever. You're trotting him out there once every 5 days. You don't have a sixth starter that is a better option than that. Like, I do not think Thomas Hatch is better than that. I don't know about the guy they called up the other day and with emergency stuff, Peacock. But I don't believe that he is a better option than Kikuchi. Kikuchi can at least still get you some punch outs. He can at least, resemble a starting pitcher at this level for some times. But last night, again, it wasn't just Kikuchi. It was the three guys that pitched all together. They still call for Trevor Richards in a leverage spot. The game is very much in play there. They're down a couple of runs.
Yeah, starting to
they
rally.
Need a clean inning. Starting to rally, starting to get things going, and they bring in Trevor Richards, who immediately concedes a run. Immediately. A guy who has stunk in leverage all season long. They still need him in leverage. Why? Because he's one of the guys that has swing and miss stuff. And so John Schneider's going to go to him. He likes him. He just does. That's why it seems to be one of his early kind of I don't want to say Achilles heels, but one of his early things that I would say I disagree with John Schneider on is that he keeps going to Trevor Richards. The thing is, people go, well, they should have gone to Zach Pop there, who looks pretty good in his couple of debuts. Like, he looks all right. He looks fine. Again, to me, nothing overly special. You get one strikeout over two innings as a relief pitcher. I go, that's exactly the sort of thing that you hope. But the stuff, the raw stuff, looks really nice. I do care that he's Canadian. I'm sorry. I'm not going to pretend like I don't. I root for him a little bit extra. But, yeah. Okay, you could have gone to Zach Pop instead. Maybe it's a two-run game. You don't end up winning it. But either way, the bullpen just isn't deep enough. There's still no swing and miss. And the starting pitching options, there's two guys that are massive question marks every time they go out right now in Mitch White and Yusei Kikuchi. It's just, it's really, it does not feel like this team is ready to roll for a two-month stretch where they've got to protect this lead in the wild card and get the home field advantage. Like, again, this isn't about if you get into that playoffs, do you have the three guys and do you have the offense? Those things were very clear to me. It's, do you have the horses down the stretch to be able to, one, sustain some injuries? No. Like, right now, they're right up against it. Could you imagine an injury to another one of their back-end bullpen guys? Like, if Jimmy Garcia hits the IL again or Jordan Romano gets hurt again? Like, they're in unbelievable trouble.
And this is where we get to their depth and their pit, like their prospects. None of them are even close. That Tiedemann guy's, like, three A's away from being in the MLB.
He's not. There's the Zuleta guy and Mitch Younger, and we'll see if those two guys end up getting promotions. I think that you probably will see them. But again, this just like the whole bullpen is just righties. Like, they're just all right-handed. They just don't have anything. They really didn't do enough addition. And so, yeah, I'm sorry, but I really am looking at this when it comes to the offseason and saying this is the work they need to do. They had an opportunity to do some of that work or better work last week. They didn't do it, and it's going to be really hard to get over for people every single time this happens. And that's why I do wonder if this ends up being what breaks the season. And I'm not saying that it will. I'm just saying that it could. Could you not foresee a scenario where we go down the stretch and we're looking back at the Blue Jays record and the reason they didn't finish with home field advantage is because of the pitching? If we look back on that, I do wonder how the evaluation is going to go for a team that already fired a manager, right? That's the one thing about playing that fire the manager card. It always shifts the focus to the front office if things don't go correct. And after they fired Charlie Montoyo, John Schneider's team got red hot. They put together an incredible record, and everyone thought that they were going to be big-time buyers of the deadline. They were not. Some people have said, well, what were you supposed to do? What could you have added? Blah, 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 blah. Tons of pitchers went. A lot of starters went. A lot of relievers went. The prices were high. That's the cost of doing business. I'm sorry. You can say that they shouldn't have done it. That can be your opinion. That's fine. I'm not saying that's a wrong opinion. It's just a sports opinion. I'm just telling you, I do wonder if Ross Atkins' group fails because of this, whether or not the microscope will be shifted to them and whether or not there will be discussions of, well, potentially somebody else does need to come in here with Shapiro. Because I don't think Shapiro's going anywhere, but I do wonder if he looks at it and says, maybe we get a different voice with me at GM.
Interesting point that Blair Barker brought up post-game last night that relates to the the organization in terms of their decision-making. Just a little tidbit, something to chew on potentially, is do you think that they're continuously running Kikuchi out because of the contract and trying to find a way to prove that that was the right decision, or trying to give justification that if he turns it around that they gave him all this money and he's there for two more years? It was just an interesting point that he brought up. A lot of callers are talking about it last night as well. Does that have any impact to why we're going to keep seeing him instead of just, as Blair was saying, it's just like, get rid of him or put him in the bullpen?
Well, I think pretty clearly, yes, because this is like being a first-round draft pick, is you get more leeway when you're a first-round pick. If you're somebody that gets a big contract, you're going to get more opportunities to do this, right? Like, if Yusei Kikuchi wasn't making any money, then, yeah, of course they would probably demote him.
At what point do you start to say, all right, like, we'll eat this and make it a part of our legacy in terms of, oh, we made a mistake?
Well, this is a group that's already eaten the Tanner Roark contract. This is a group that's already eating the Hyunjin Ryu contract. Like, if I'm the owner of the Blue Jays, I'm going, how many bad pitchers' money do you want me to just eat? And this is the part of it, though, that it's like, sure, everybody that says get rid of Yusei Kikuchi, go with anybody else, at this point, it has been so bad. If it continues this way, right, where the next 10 starts or whatever, even the next 5 starts, the next 3 starts, 4 starts, whatever you want to put it at, continue at the rate of the numbers that I just said, well, then, yeah, you almost do have to try something else because it really can't get much worse, right? What he's doing right now is about as bad as any pitcher has been in baseball for a very long time. This is over this kind of an extended stretch. This is really, really, really bad. So yeah, you can take a look at somebody in the minor leagues because you don't have anything to lose. Problem is that they don't have anything there. If there was somebody, if there was even a remotely appealing option other than Kikuchi, I would be saying, do this, right? If they still had Ross Stripling healthy, I'd be saying Kikuchi should be the guy that's being demoted. Sure, see if he can do something in the bullpen, especially right now where they don't have a left-handed reliever. Try to salvage him into something. But again, they do not have anyone that can give them those innings. Would you rather see Trent Thornton stretched out as an opener? Like, I don't know what the... And then Kikuchi comes in after him? Like, who... That's always the thing with me, with ideas. People go, oh, well, this is the first part. Okay, well, what's the second part? Somebody still has to pitch for them. You're going to go to a 4-man rotation? No, obviously not. But what are you going to do? Who are you calling up from AAA? What is the option? Right now, they don't have them. That's what I'm saying about the deadline. That's what I'm saying about why it was such a bad one, is what I said about the broadcast, going, they need 6 innings from Kikuchi. If your team needs 6 innings from one of the worst starters in baseball, a week removed from the trade deadline, I think you've done a pretty bad job at your trade deadline. It's really hard for me to think that, wow, this is just tough luck. Because what? They lost Tim Mayza and Ross Stripling? Huh? So that's justification for this? No, they're in a really bad spot. I really think they needed to do more. Now it's not about that. Now it's about looking forward. But holy crap, does this offense need to produce a ton of runs? And holy crap, do they need to win the games when their good starting pitchers are on the mound?
And a lot of that last night, obviously Kikuchi, the main storyline, but they missed a lot of opportunities to hit with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, they sure did.
That's also not a great combination. It's not. I don't think it's the reason that they lost. I think it's a tough thing to come back. They started to rally, but there's a lot of opportunities to get the game within reach. They did. There were 2 runs, but yeah, the pitching, the main issue, but do need to address that. It's tough to watch. Bo, 2 outs, what did he ground out at the end of the game? There's a lot of opportunities where there was big moments that you just got to get a hit, and the team hasn't always delivered in that, and that was another reason last night that they didn't win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I...
What a good combo.
I still always have trouble blaming the offense, but yeah, nights like last night is just where they don't string them together. Mm-hmm. But then you look at their team OPS, and I think that they're still 4th. It's just, yeah. They're too similar. There's some stuff that I wish that they did a little bit better. Last night, I guess, was a little frustrating all around. But to me, it's just still what's going to hold this team back. I still can't really blame the bats.
No.
There's some guys that I do think need to be reevaluated in terms of what their ceiling is as players during the offseason. I do think that they're going to have some tough decisions to make in terms of, hey, do you keep all these outfielders that you currently have? I don't think so. But as of right now, this team, just to me, is so obviously better positioned with a little bit more pitching. They did not do enough at the deadline, and we're going to be looking at this for a long, long time over the stretch run. Before we move on to today's A-list, and again, today's text line Tuesday, 590-590, I guess one of my questions is just simply going to be, are you looking at the deadline differently? Either way, like, are you looking at it right now as you're a week removed from it? Do you feel like if you were somebody in the camp of, they did fine, they had a fine deadline, they added Anthony Bass, he was a back-end guy, sure, you would have liked to got more swing and miss, but you get him and Zach Pop, that's 2 bullpen arms, and you got Merrifield's a guy who could start for you.
Been fine.
Yeah. I thought he's okay.
He's not going to be the savior for the George Springer injury, but he has been, I do think, surprising. I think he's earned a little bit more respect than we might have given him right away. That's where I stand.
I don't know who wasn't giving him respect.
A lot of people.
Well,
you got this 33-year-old that's not, not doing much, bringing him in here. But I think he's done better than I had expected. And I think some people would agree with that.
Well, I would say this about Merrifield is that right now, over his five games and only 20 plate appearances with the Toronto Blue Jays, his OPS is even lower than it was all season in Kansas City, where it was to the tune of 643. I think that this is the thing about batting average guys, is that it looks pretty decent when they're hitting. Because like right now, you look at Merrifield, it's like, oh, he's been hitting over 300 since he's been a Blue Jay. Well, that's all he's done is the hits. He's gotten drawn no walks. And
he plowed
all those
over
hits.
A catcher to win
yeah,
the game in extra innings.
And that was
ding,
nice.
Ding, ding.
Again, he has the stolen base. So Merrifield has had some nice plays.
Sure.
Absolutely, he's had some nice plays. He's contributed to a win. There's no question about it. But, yeah, he's been exactly what was advertised in Kansas City so far, I would say. And I don't know if he's been better than I expected, especially considering, yeah, the numbers tell a story of a guy that's consistently exactly what he's been so far. Yeah, do you evaluate the deadline differently? Do you look at it and say, hey, they actually, this team was never good enough. There was too much to shore up, blah, 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 blah. And so this was the right move. Or were you somebody that was in the camp of they did enough and now you're feeling like maybe they didn't? Again, now we've gotten to see these pieces. It's been a week. We have a little bit of track record. And we'll see how we feel a week from then, too. Like, we'll kind of keep obviously checking in on this periodically. But the other news from yesterday, my guy, Kevin Durant.
Your guy.
Future Toronto Raptor, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimatums. When is an ultimatum good?
Never.
Yeah, I know.
Like, literally never.
I cannot think of a time where someone gives a... Like, I guess an ultimatum is good if you have to decide on a job opportunity. And you... Because
okay, like, pay me this
done.
Or I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah.
In a job opportunity.
Yeah, like you're trying... But when it comes to relationships and people, which this is, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is relationships and people. And yes, it's also business, so it's a little muddied. But boy, this was a weird... I don't want to say it was a weird story yesterday because this is kind of what a lot of people predicted what was going to happen with the Kevin Durant saga. That this
and
was
he would
always
have an ultimatum of this severity?
Yeah, pretty much. A lot of people projected that that Durant was always at odds with general manager Sean Marks. I thought it was a little curious that Steve Nash was lumped into this, mm-hmm. and I think that a lot of people were considering that, by most accounts, Nash was handpicked by Durant.
And the way that Durant talked about him postseason, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, he gave him a lot of leeway. It's dealt with some stuff as a head coach, first-time coach, trades, injuries, COVID. Like, he gave him his flowers. Sure. When he didn't have to.
I also think that Durant is a student of the game and he loves basketball and that there is respect for him with Steve Nash. So I'd love to know a little bit more detail as to what it is Durant has such an issue with Nash. But either way, I think that maybe they just view this as a front office deal. But yeah, it was reported yesterday by Sham Sharania that in meetings with Nets owner Joe Tsai, Durant reiterated his trade request and informed Tsai that he needed to choose between Durant and the pairing of general manager Sean Marks and coach Steve Nash. So that gets reported by Shams. And then a little while later, after the internet kind of, I think, set Durant aflame, Joe Tsai, because I always wonder who leaks these things, right? Who has the most to gain? It's pretty clear to me that the Nets leaked this, got the general feel, and the public said, this is crazy that Durant wants this, considering this is the same general manager that just gave him a huge contract extension a year ago that he re-upped with. This is the same head coach that he vouched for, like you just said, mm-hmm. who he praised, who he asked to be here.
And he brought in a lot of his community, some guys that he'd played with or worked with or right. helped him as a staff. Like, you go through the list of four or five people that Durant helped bring to make his experience better.
Well, just that Durant has been the GM.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean Marks is probably looking at him going, buddy, you should be firing yourself. Either way, Joe Tsai tweets, our front office and coaching staff have my support. We will make our decisions in the best interest of the Brooklyn Nets. You know why that's a good tweet for Joe Tsai? He's saying, hey, Kevin Durant actually doesn't own the Brooklyn Nets. I do. So I'll be making the decisions I think that are best. Problem is, the best decision for the Brooklyn Nets still involves keeping Kevin Durant over those two guys. Sean Marks is definitely not more valuable than even a aging, often recently injured, mercurial Kevin Durant. It's just, that's just facts. I'm sorry. I love Steve Nash. He's not right now Greg Popovich, okay? He's not Eric Spoelstra. He's done a fine job with what has been given to him, I guess. Sure, that's how we're evaluating Steve Nash. Sean Marks, same thing. They look at it and go, this guy had a lot of equity before Kevin Durant came to town. He was a buzzy general manager. If you remember those Nets teams that he put together when it was just, they took them from being an absolute nothing after that Celtics trade. A hole in the ground. To a fun Brooklyn team that had Jared Allen and Caris LeVert and the only good D'Angelo Russell season that exists out there. Enough that the Warriors thought that they were going to make him the third Splash Brother or whatever. They built up a team that actually was sort of fun and had real assets that they've used in multiple trades. But every one of those assets, every one of those players has gone out the door to appease Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And this has to be the most frustrating part of all of this, is who knows what about the dynamics behind closed doors between some of these guys, because I'm sure there's always going to be more to the story than we, the public, get to consume, right? But this, to me, is the most frustrating of relationships you can have, is where you give and you give and you give, and the other side just wants to take, take, take. And at the end of the day, when things don't work out, they're still blaming you. And that's what Kevin Durant appears to be doing. Well, now I want my own hand-picked front office and a new hand-picked coach a year later, Kevin?
It was the one-year anniversary literally yesterday that this came out of him signing his contract.
You want a new front office that does what? Listens to you more? Remember when Steve Nash came in and was the coach? Kyrie said, well, he's not really the coach. We're kind of the coach. Mm-hmm. They were like, we're the Brooklyn Nets. We have ownership over this. These guys have really let this go to their heads, where they go, we are the entire team. You're sitting down with the owner in earnest, telling them, fire people, take away jobs, because they're just not cutting it, when Kyrie Irving just played less than half of a season and Kevin Durant just essentially no-showed in a playoff series against Boston, where he got outplayed by multiple Boston Celtics players as a guy who's making his freight. It's outrageous. Like, I don't know what other position you're supposed to take on this one. Does it affect the way that I view what the Raptors should give up? Not really, because my position has been clear all along. If you can get Kevin Durant at a discounted rate and you can turn, I'm sorry, the likes of OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam into Kevin Durant, you absolutely have to do it. It changes the entire dynamic of what your team can be and the ceiling of what your team can be.
Even with the way that he's acting?
Even with the way that he's acting. It's a risk you have to take. This is a league where... Okay, so I saw somebody tweet, I don't like calling it the player empowerment era, because a lot of players don't have more power than they actually used to have. It's the star empowerment era, because it's a handful of guys that are basically controlling the dynamics of the entire league. And I thought that was a really astute point, because it's true, right? Think about all the players that have been involved in deals for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Did Caris LeVert have player empowerment? Did Jared Allen have player empowerment? Like, those guys were, you know, near... Jared Allen was an all-star last year. Those guys got flipped to wherever the hell the Nets wanted them to be flipped to. They didn't have any say anything at the time. Think about, like, who's... The guys that wanted contracts that they gave to DeAndre Jordan. They're in control. These are the superstar players. They're trying to run the Brooklyn Nets. And they're doing a horrible job. Like, we criticized GM LeBron all these years, and he hasn't exactly been great. But GM Kevin Durant has been even worse somehow. By the way, you see KD was partying with James Harden at Baby's concert? Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of curious, where he went from not
was
saying
it Travis
his name.
Scott's concert?
Or it was Travis Scott. Yeah, it was Travis Scott. But I saw at the All-Star game, he didn't want to say James Harden's name, and now they're just out there having fun, good times. I can separate business and friendships too, but yeah. It's just...
You can also go to the same concert and not spend all this...
It was just weird. It was a tough look.
Make headlines.
It was just a tough look at that time. I just thought, wow, I wonder, with all these things happening at once, if James Harden was talking to KD saying, well, I blame Nash and I blame this and whatever. They were all kind of having their crying together. Either way, I think the Nets are in an incredibly difficult position because, again, keeping Durant is what is best for that team moving forward. It's the only shot that they have at winning next year. It's the only shot that they probably have at winning over the next couple of years. Maybe they end up getting an absolute haul from somebody, which they probably would, but that haul will never equate to a Kevin Durant. It'll remind me always of like pretty much every star trade, but you just saw it with baseball, right? Juan Soto, and it's a completely different thing, but Juan Soto gets traded for all the prospects in the world, and you think we're going to look back on that 5 years from now and go, wow, Nationals did incredibly well. No, we're going to look back on that and go, kudos to the Padres who got aggressive and who got the superstar player. But yeah, your decision as an owner with Joe Tsai is keep one of the best players in the world or basically admit that you're the only owner in the NBA that isn't really an owner.
So what gives you a better chance to win a championship? Kevin Durant with a new head coach and GM or Marks and Nash with whatever you can get and a KD deal?
Durant, no question.
All right.
Absolutely no question.
Text in 590-590.
Shawn Marks and Steve Nash, again, they're very replaceable. This is a league where 12 guys matter more than any other league, other than the NFL where maybe it's quarterbacks. But either way, it's they're in an impossible spot. This just feels like a very, very big moment for the NBA in terms of how far the league is going to bend the knee to these select groups of superstars.
That's a really
tough
precedent, too, if they do this and next superstar wants a shakeup as well.
Well, imagine if Durant was 27 years old and he didn't have a history of lower body injuries. Imagine if that was a part of this, you know? Like he was still in his peak prime, what this would look like. I think it would be different. I don't even think we'd be having any discussions. Shawn Marks would already be fired. Steve Nash would already be gone. Let's take a break. What's on the A-list today?
It's the effing Catalina wine mixer.
Okay.
What's next?
You'll start with Pete Walker. You cannot perform miracles, and I think it's a combination of the sequence of pitches that we're seeing. But earlier in this game, we mentioned it too. It looks like a pitcher to me that cannot command a fastball, does not believe he can command a fastball, just feels like he can't do it. And if you can't go to your fastball on occasion, I'm not talking about fastball usage this time, Jamie. We've been talking about Kikuchi all year about using the fastball more. He's using it more, but if you can't command it at all and be in the zone somehow, it's very hard to pitch at this level.
Well, that's not on the A-list, Kikuchi. But that quote, that could be an A-lister. Joe Siddle really just being honest. Tough one. We're going to talk about that with Ben Ennis at 7, but maybe some more positive things on the A-list. Let's get right into it.
Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Okay, I said it's the Catalina wine mixer. You might remember this song from that movie. Duke, offensive lineman, Chance Lytle, has a unique talent. He's a 6'7 guy. According to the Duke Athletic website, just under 330 pounds. Played 4 seasons with the Colorado Buffaloes, just made his move to the ACC. So he transfers to Duke. He's looking to impress his new teammates. This is how he does so. I don't know. I thought that was pretty good, no?
That's the most impressive thing to ever come out of Duke football. there's no question. Like, that was amazing.
It was amazing. I was shocked when I saw this because usually you see... Like, I played it the other day, the Bills rookie singing, and it was actually boys, and it was awful. This was great.
No, usually singing with football is hazing.
This guy earned a dual degree in music and vocal performance, and as well as psychology when he was at Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, that was phenomenal. Legit. That was very, very, very legit. I'm unbelievably impressed. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about this. That's an incredible talent to have. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like Duke football, it's not exactly the most prestigious football school. It's not Duke basketball, okay? it's pretty clear who the big dogs on campus are. This guy, though, this guy, be careful, buddy. You got, I don't know, you can't sing with the group. You can't do that. He's got to be a prospect for some kind of Duke a cappella group. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I bet they have that there. We'll prep you.
Oh, they definitely got that there. Duke is hoity-toity, all right? Like, they got some stuff. I'm just saying that this guy, that was great. So good for him. Good for him with that talent. I don't know what else to say. It's impressive.
He might be in Here Comes Treble at Duke.
Nice.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great. Maybe you'll have more eyes on Duke this year because of this guy. I wonder if I had a friend once sing the national anthem before our games. She at university, well, it happened once or twice. I wonder if he would ever do that, or if that's just crossing the line a bit. Get up there and sing Star Spangled Banner.
If he wanted to, I would think that when you're trying to prepare for a game, that would be a little distracting.
I've seen it happen.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, keep an eye on Chance Lytle. He's the next Will Ferrell. In other news, devastating news, actually. So please take a moment of silence for this. The Cleveland Guardians have demoted their mustard mascot through what has been a tough 2022 season. The mascot has been a part of 50 races at Progressive Field this year, going winless in all 50 contests. Both Ketchup and Onion have recorded 25 victories, successfully blanking mustard on the scoreboard. The team released a statement following the demotion with no timetable on possible return. Quote, Cleveland Guardians option mustard to High A Lake Country. The Cleveland Guardians announced today the following roster moves. Optioned mustard to Lake County. The club did not make a corresponding move. Mustard, 17, has struggled at a historic pace this season, failing to secure a victory in any of the first 50 Sugardale hot dog races. The tantrum-throwing condiment is sent down to the Guardians High A team to try and get his mental and physical game back to MLB caliber. He's expected to report to the captains on Monday and race in Tuesday's contest.
So you went from a great clip on the A-list of this incredible singer who's an offensive lineman to, I would say, bottom five story in A-list history here. Yeah, that's so lame. Everything about that was lame. It was hard to even listen to you finish that, to be honest. But my biggest issue with it, actually, is that mustard is the only condiment for a hot dog. Like, unless you count,
this is why I brought this up, because I know you're a big mustard guy.
Well, I just think it's truly one of those things where I don't like to yuck people's yums. Right? You like it? You like it.
Unless it's Mounds and it's Sam McKee.
Yeah, there are certain exceptions is what I'm saying. There's only so much I can do. I can only bite my tongue with perfect palate so much before you force me. Otherwise, my tongue will bleed. Mustard is the only thing that is acceptable to put on a hot dog or a sausage when it comes to the condiment family. Unless you view sauerkraut as a condiment, I don't. I view it as sauerkraut, right? Like, when we're talking condiments, it's ketchup and mustard, relish. Even relish, I would say, okay, it's not insane. But when I see people put ketchup on a hot dog, I really just look at it. An adult? A child, of course. It's for children. It's there for children. It's sugar. And you go, yeah, kids like sugar, and here, give them the sugar paste for their dog. This is for them, because they gotta work their way up to knowing what to eat and how to eat things properly. So demoting mustard, I feel like this is the real issue I have with this, is like, this is kind of telling the world that mustard is not needed in some ballparks. Mm-hmm. You know, mustard is not the go-to number one.
Mustard's a failure.
And I disagree. I vehemently disagree. And yeah, if
those
you want to have
stats, he's 0-50.
Yeah. And like, this isn't one of those, like, a lot of people love to do, you and I joke a lot about the pineapple on pizza people, right? Mm-hmm. Where you go, it's actually a thing that you're born with or not. It's genuinely like, it's cilantro, the same thing. It's not a, you don't build up the taste to something like that. It's just genuinely a chemical composition in your mouth that makes it so. All right. So the arguments are kind of dumb, right? And I'm not saying never put it. I'm just saying that, yeah, just try it. Just try.
You are saying never put it.
I would never put it. I would. I'm a grown man. I'm an adult.
I agree that on a sausage, that's not my preferred condiment. But on a hot dog, when I'm at Looney Dogs, I need something to.
I'm going to Looney Dogs this week.
Well, there's no game tomorrow.
Next week.
Okay.
Well, it's a week from today.
Okay, that 16th. I know you're going next week. I thought, well, are you going to fly down to Baltimore for today's Looney Dogs? I'm going to
push myself though at Looney Dog Day. I want you to know that. Like, I'm going to give it a go. I was inspired by Joey Chestnut. I was inspired by you because I feel like you were the first. You brought great awareness to Looney Dog Day.
You know what? You know? Looney Dogs has only been growing. Last week they had Looney Dogs set their season high. Has created the buzz around Looney Dogs? Dude. Myself. I am the you know there's a mascot at Looney Dogs?
Yeah, I do.
The Looney. There's a legitimate Looney that walks around and he's so cute with his little like cartoon hands. Get a photo with Looney.
I will. In regards to Looney Dogs, you pushed yourself. I feel like I need to do the same.
Yeah, you'll beat me. I have no doubt about it.
No, but what I was going to say to you is, do you think you know more stats about Looney Dog Day or about, like, what sport would you say rivals Looney Dog stats for you? Mm. Like, how high up the sport train do you have to go? Because you know Looney, that's what I mean. Like, you're
CFL.
Obviously, like, yeah. That, oh, you definitely know more about Looney Dogs than CFL. That's what I'm saying, is you're kind of the, I think that your account should involve a little bit more Looney Dog stat tracking.
Hey, but, like, I'm trying to be, like, a healthy young woman.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you need to go eat them every single day.
I'm just saying that. Just to share the
you can sort of be on top of Looney Dog tweets on every Tuesday. I don't see why that's. And yeah, okay, yeah. I like how you're like, I'm trying to be a healthy young woman as you probably boozed at a lake for an entire weekend. Like, sure. Yeah, no, I'm guessing that your diet this past weekend was phenomenal. All right, what's next?
Okay. Lots of people texting in that you're an idiot for not liking ketchup.
I didn't. Whoa. My position is I don't dislike ketchup. Ketchup is great on a hamburger.
Ketchup is only for kids.
And it's also good on a hamburger. Okay. But on a hot dog or a sausage, it's for children. And you need to grow up. Yeah, 100%.
But you might need it when you have the drier Looney Dogs, just so you know. Okay, last thing on the A-list. Similar to the poor mustard not being on the team anymore. Over the weekend, the Guardians, once again, announced that they're DFAing Franmil Reyes. When you look at his numbers, you get it. He was optioned to AAA last week, not having the greatest season. Monday, he was claimed off the waivers by the Cubs, and he's going to slide right into Chicago's 40-man roster. Not a big deal, right? Guys get DFA'd. Mustard gets DFA'd all the time. The only hang-up for Cleveland is that they included Reyes in their bobblehead promotion. 12,500 little mini Franimals will be given out on September 3rd in Cleveland, and he is not on the team anymore. So there is going to be, I don't know, a limited edition, one-off, rare bobblehead provided, which has also happened before when the Orioles and Kevin Gausman had a bobblehead giveaway after the All-Star break, and they sold their whole team, including Gausman. So I don't know if that adds the intrigue to go there and get this special one-of-a-kind bobblehead or if they will even continue with it, but I don't know. It's a real tough look. I know the Jays do giveaways all the time. I wonder if they would pull a giveaway if they had not Kikuchi. I don't know why it came to mind. He's not going anywhere. Somebody that got traded or doesn't play on the team anymore, would they pull that and the big sunken cost, or do you just go with it?
I would, like, I don't care about bobbleheads at all.
There's a lot of people that line up at 6 a.m.
No, I know. Yeah, which is, again, whatever. Teach their own, I guess. That's a bobblehead I would want.
Mm-hmm.
Is a weird one where you'd have a story attached to it, and you would go, "Wow!" Like I don't want the Bo Bichette bobblehead, the guy that's in your play. Like, okay, cool. I would want the story bobblehead. So to me, that only adds value.
Ooh.
That would add. It's like, think about jerseys now, right? You go to a ball game, you go to a hockey game, whatever, any sporting event, you'll see a million of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Austin Matthews, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now Scottie Barnes will be there. Okay, those are great jerseys. I'm, again, not saying don't get those. But what are the ones that stop people and go, wow, it's if you have, like, Jorge Garbajosa, you know? Like, that's what gets people's attention, is the different ones. And that's a cool story to have, right? So I'd rather have the cool story than the popular, well-known bobblehead.
If you're a bobblehead collector and you're listening to the show, I have a lot of questions, as in, what do you do with them and where do you display
them? They put them
on, like, you have a cabinet. Do you take them out of the box? Are they untouchable? No. I'm very curious what your plan is. Are they something down the road that you resell?
I really want to know
from the bobblehead collectors what the end goal is. So please, 590-590. It is also text line Tuesday. You can text in all your takes. We're going to talk to Ben Ennis after the break. I don't know if he's a catch-up guy, but we might find out. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Spurs on 590 The Fan.